Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh yeah, started on too many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with the legendary Pete Seeger and David Burns, who wrote the song, except for the one word, Solartopia, which I wrote. I'm Harvey Sluggo Washington, back with you for another hour here on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show at PRN. Thank you, Jesse and the crew in New York, for running the board. And, well, we got the inevitable to talk about, the Bill Maher version of the Mueller report, which nobody has seen. This is going to be a bestseller when it hits. Apparently, according to the New York Times today, it's 300 pages, of which we've seen, I think, less than 100 words. And the Trump people are all dancing in the street. No collusion. I don't do Donald Trump invitations. Sorry. It's like, I don't want that karma. I'll leave it up to Stephen Colbert. But we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about a little nuclear stuff and also some Israel stuff, which I generally avoid like a plague, but Marcy has asked me. So I've got three great guests, and one of them is kind of on call. So we're going to start. We got Craig Unger, magnificent best-selling author, New York Times best-selling author of House of Bush, House of Saud, and now House of Trump, House of Putin, one of the great experts on the lunatic in the White House, the organized criminal, whatever else you want to call him. Craig Unger, are you with us?
I am. Great to be here.
Well, we understand if you may have to jump off. You're on deadline, and that's great. That's good news.
Right.
We're glad somebody's picking up your stuff, and we want to talk, of course, about what you've been writing about. Marcy Winograd, you're here in L.A. with me. Where are you?
I am right here, Harvey. Ready to go.
All right, good for you. A great Democratic Party and general social activist, and also a partner in crime with me on the big Diablo Canyon fight, which we want to talk a bit about. I was just in Ohio, and there's some very important parallel developments in Ohio with California. It seems like a new issue follows me around. I lived in Ohio for 50 years. Now I'm out here, and the same thing is happening here. We got a nuclear power operator in both states in bankruptcy. So we're going to talk about that. Ted Vail, you're in your car?
No, I decided to stay at home until this is over before I head to see the great Florida State basketball team trounce Gonzaga.
Well, all right. So is this the round of 16 or the 8? Where are they now?
They're in the round of 16. I was at the game last year, Florida State, where my wife went to school, my late wife, and they beat Gonzaga last year. And they're 7 points behind, so get your bets on the line. Get them on Florida State. They're going to crush them this year. Anyway,
well, we don't want to hold
you
up.
You've got to do things other than politics once in a while.
All right. Well, good for you. I've actually never been. I went to the University of Michigan. I went to a few games, and I guess they're in the tournament now, too, doing pretty well.
Oh, yeah. I may see them, too. Hopefully they'll beat Texas Tech. Same place,
right, well,
Honda Center here in Anaheim.
All right. Well, listen, when you're in the Michigan game, I want you to remember these two words, go blue. All right? You got that? Okay.
I'll do the Florida State tomahawk chalk, and then I'll say go blue.
No. Don't do that. Don't do that. You'll get.
They may be playing each other next. They may be playing each other next.
No tomahawk chops, please, except for Donald Trump. So, Craig Unger, as one of the great experts on Donald Trump and his history as a criminal and his background here, I'm just going to open this up to you. Give us your takeaway on what's happened with this insane scenario where the Mueller report is dropped. We find out today from the New York Times it's 300 pages, and we have less than 100 words. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, one is there are actually different versions of how long it is, and Judge Joe Napolitano on Fox said it was 700 pages. But the length
really?
Is important. Yeah, the length is important because we don't know what the real length is. I mean, he may be wrong. I don't know who's right in this case, but it would be very, very good to know, because when and if it is finally released, and that's absolutely important, if it comes out to be 12 pages, we know a lot is being suppressed. And obviously, I think that the bar version of it is not to be trusted whatsoever.
It could be 300 pages and 600 pages of attachments.
Right, something like that may well be the case, for all I know.
I would expect, and
it would be great to know the reality, so we can know that when something finally drops, how much it may have been suppressed.
Well, I would expect that it would be, a couple hundred pages at least. But then you must have 1,000 pages of attachments. I mean,
absolutely.
He did all these interviews, all these subpoenas. Wouldn't you think there'd be like a book length, a War and Peace?
Well, I wrote 400 pages, and if you saw my files, it'd be tens of thousands of pages. You know what I mean? With all sorts of documents. So
it might be as long as the Pentagon Papers.
Yeah,
well,
there should be tens of thousands of pages of associated documents, and it would be great to know what they have. So that's really important. And, I think Barr is clearly in there just to give, he applied for the job essentially by writing this 19-page memo that was incredibly sycophantish to Trump. When he testified before Congress during his confirmation hearings, we shouldn't be surprised at this. He made it clear that he was not necessarily going to release everything, and the Democrats now have to fight like hell to make sure that's the case. And then, we also have problems of we don't know what Mueller did. We really don't know at this stage. But putting all that aside for a moment, I think one of the great problems here is, my old friend journalist Mike Kinsley used to say, the real scandal is what's legal. And an awful lot of incredibly corrupt things, Trump may skate legally, but he should be ousted from office for sure. And, I go back to in my book I say this and I report on it, and it's all a matter of official record that in 1984, a Russian mobster named David Bogatin met with Trump, bought 5 condos. He put down $6 million in cash. It's the equivalent of $15 million today. And he said, "I'll take 5." And in doing so, he was Donald Trump was effectively laundering money for the Russian mafia, and that's how the relationship with Russians began, as far as I can tell. And over the years, we've had he's had dozens and dozens of very dubious Russian associates. At least 13 have been tied to Trump Tower in one way or another, either by living there, by trading apartments there, by running operations out of there. Bayrock was a real estate group that had ties to Russian intelligence, to Russian criminals, and they were actually located in Trump Tower on the 24th floor there. And Trump started, they came to Trump with an offer he couldn't refuse. They said, "We'll give you 18 to 25% of our, you don't have to put up a dime." Remember, Trump was $4 billion in debt when he got out of Atlantic City. No bank would loan him money except for Deutsche Bank, which was used to laundering money for the Russian mafia. So he needed a new business model, and the Russians came to him and said, "Look, you don't put up a dime. We just want to franchise your name. We'll raise the money for all these condos, $400 million or so, to build Trump Soho here in New York, and many, many similar buildings all over the world. And we'll give you 18 to 25% of the profits, which is a huge, huge portion in the franchise game. I mean, if you're Hyatt or Marriott, if you want a franchise from them, they get 3 or 4%. Donald Trump's gets 18 to 25%. So well, they are responsible for him being rich.
Did they refer to it in their negotiations as a VIG? Which is a mafia term, as I'm sure you know.
I
Marcy Winograd, you want to jump in on this?
Oh, sure. I have a somewhat contrary view of all of this. I guess I'm more in the Glenn Greenwald camp in that I think that the Mueller report, while yes, we do want to see it, I think that the Democrats, the sooner they can stop talking about this, the more likely they'll be on a winning path in 2020. I really don't think that we can look toward a special counsel, a one man to save us from an authoritarian government and from a base bent on supporting that sort of authoritarianism. Yes, I think we should see the Mueller report, but I would like Nadler to subpoena Robert Mueller, have him come and read the report out loud, every word. And if the Justice Department intervenes, if Barr tries to enjoin him from doing that, well, then that's a worthy political cause. But I am very concerned about constantly focusing on this as, in a way, it's a distraction in terms of analyzing what went wrong in 2016 with the Democrats, with their platform, with their candidate, and with the years preceding that. And so it's not just benign. In some ways, it's really counterproductive. We want to win in 2020. We want to take back the White House. I don't see this as the path. I would much prefer to hear the Democrats rail every minute of the day against Trump destroying Americans' health care, against Trump robbing Americans of taxpayer money, giving handouts to the rich, corporate cronies, polluting our air, water, land, stealing public lands. These are the issues I would prefer to hear Democrats talking about right now.
Well, very interesting.
Combine whatever exists in the Mueller report with whatever comes out of the Southern District of New York. They're the ones who are looking at Russian money laundering. And I think that is the genesis for all of, as Mr. Unger said, all of the Trump connections with Russia. It just was a continuity into the present time. And, of course, he's going to contact the Russians and try to soften the sanctions and things like that. The two of them are parts of a puzzle that have to be put together. And we have 20 months to do it, almost 20 months before the next election. So there'll be plenty of time to talk about health care and other important issues. But we need to get that report out, the Mueller report, and have the Southern District tell us what they're doing, and we'll go from there.
Well, Craig Unger, you're in New York City. Have they contacted you? Have the feds contacted you? How seriously are they, in fact, taking your and David K. Johnson and other material on Donald Trump's money laundering?
Well, I think the real, you know, I think you're going to see some of this come up in the House Intelligence Committee, and they will be examining Felix Sater. It was supposed to be today, actually, and I think things got postponed for a while. But you know, essentially, your other guest was talking about, in electoral terms, I think it may well be, it is true that health care is enormously, enormously important. And I think that clearly had played a big role in the Democrats' success in the midterms. At the same time, this is really an assault on America's sovereignty with the help of a man who is president of the United States. That is really traitorous. I mean, as I see it, I mean, I know, I understand treason is you're supposed to. You can only be treason if you aid a treasonous if it's you're aiding a hostile foreign power during a war, and we haven't declared war in ages because Congress has abandoned that prerogative. But Trump has been aiding a hostile foreign power. And that cannot stand as I see it. And I think we have to get to the bottom of it. Mueller alone can't do it. I certainly think that's the case. And I think part of it is, as a prosecutor, he's supposed to indict, he's supposed to win convictions, and a lot of these things may not even be crimes. But, I mean, it's not okay, as I see it, for the President of the United States to give essentially a home base for the Russian mafia, which is a state actor. The Russian mafia is, it's very unlike the Italian-American mafia here, which is constantly at war with the FBI. Russia is a mafia state, and Putin, they're the enforcers for Putin. And there they are, many of them living in Trump Tower, in Trump properties, collecting information. Bayrock had enormous amounts of information on how the oligarchs were making their money. And if you looked at the Steele dossier, there were these allegations that this is that suggests this is how that Trump was allowing information to be sent back to the Kremlin. This is one way it may well have happened.
I do want to point out.
I look at the.
And let me jump in one sec, Ted, and then you, and then Marcy. I do want to point out that we do have a historical instance, at least one, but one we know of for certain, of a person who became president of the United States who committed treason, and it's just flat out, you know, prosecutable, capital punishment treason committed by Richard Nixon in October, November of 1968, when he illegally interfered with a peace talk going on between Lyndon Johnson and the North and South Vietnamese, and told the South Vietnamese not to make peace. Now, that was a conspiracy theory for 50 years until the actual tapes came out that the FBI had of Nixon telling his liaison to the South Vietnamese, Anna Chenault, to tell them not to make peace because he'd win the election if they didn't, and then he'd give them a better deal. And Lyndon Johnson knew about that and never said a word about it in public. Now, you know, there's all sorts of conspiracy theories about that. But one thing we know for 100% certain is that Richard Nixon did commit treason in 1968. Now, one of the questions here, and I will say this, and I want to get this in. Even Barr's four-page statement did not dispute that the Russians interfered in our election. I mean, it basically is now an assumption of American life that the Russians interfered. The question is, what was Donald Trump's role? Okay, Ted Vail, go ahead now, please.
Donald Trump's role began well back when he had communications with the Russians, financial dealings, but on March 31, 2016, because he was criticized for not having a foreign policy, he convened a group of people brought together suddenly and at the uncompleted then Trump Tower in Washington, D.C., and he said, "I want to soften our positions regarding Putin and Russia. I don't want to start World War III." And those were the marching orders that he had there. In fact, Papadopoulos said, "I can set up a meeting with you with Putin." And Jeff Sessions said, no, that's not now. But the marching orders were that Russia was at the top of the plate in foreign policy, and thereafter, a number of things were done. It's been cataloged a lot. But Trump's style of operating is not, he never does email. He talks to his trusted aides like Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, and whatever he does through them. So there's deniability, like a lot of politicians have. They never give the orders directly to the person receiving the orders. It's always through someone who is trusted enough not to ever tell what he was told by Donald. And this may have given Mueller a problem because he doesn't have a smoking gun, something that Trump said. They never did an interview with Trump. They had written questions, which are massaged by the lawyers. So I think Mueller has put up a very, very high bar, maybe above beyond a reasonable doubt, maybe beyond any doubt. And he is just a lifelong Republican, not willing to essentially say that the President of the United States is a traitor to his country. So he We'll have to see what is in there regarding regarding collusion. I think there's probably a lot of nuggets in there. Whether there's anything that specifically is a smoking gun relating to Donald Trump, I don't know. We'll have to see. But I think pretty clearly we'll see on the obstruction of justice side, you may have 50 things that constitute obstruction of justice and 5 that that don't, and he can't reach a conclusion. He punts it to Congress.
Yeah, well, it would have taken a lot of backbone for him to take it on himself. And you know, my friend and our friend, Lila Garrett, has contended all along. I mean, she basically predicted that he would punt and that this was all a big distraction. And I'm looking at a New York Times story today, by the way, and it says that the Justice Department has confirmed that the report was more than 300 pages long. Marcy, do you want to jump in further on this?
Well, I just, you know, want to reiterate that I don't understand why the Democrats don't subpoena Mueller and ask him to read every word of that report. And if
Well, I understand they Nadler wants to subpoena him, and they intend to.
Well, then
the White House will intervene and say presidential executive privilege.
Well, then that needs to happen.
They're moving forward with that. That's my understanding.
Yeah. I mean, I think politically, to go after him for obstruction of justice, if the report says there is no underlying crime, not that Russia didn't try to interfere, like the United States has tried to interfere in 80 elections around the country, around the world.
that's an understatement.
If the Mueller report says there's no evidence of collusion on the part of Donald Trump himself,
I
think
bars,
the obstruction of justice charges are just not going to resonate with the American people. I'm just really concerned that we have spent so long on this, and it's a total distraction.
Okay, that's not an uncommon point of view, and I'm glad you're expressing it. Craig, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I essentially is William Barr's characterization of Mueller's report. It is not Mueller's report. And we know, for example, there's plenty of evidence. I mean, Adam Schiff gave it today. I mean, we saw Trump saying, if you're Russia, if you're listening, give me 30,000 emails, and they arrived. We know all about Roger Stone going back with Julian Assange and so forth and calling for the emails. We saw the meeting in June 2016 at Trump Tower in which Donald Trump says, I love it if you'll give me dirt on him, and then it's followed up by Manafort going to the cigar bar with Constantine Klimnik and delivering data on polling. So we know these kind of events took place. And I'm not a lawyer, but there are still many, many unanswered questions, and it's questionable to me how that stands up as conclusive, beyond a shadow of a doubt, evidence in a conspiracy case. And I guess Mueller didn't think he had it all.
I think the key here is, I think maybe Ted said, get what you can, give it to the New York court, let the state of New York go after Trump. He's not going to be indicted in office. So where is all this going to lead? It's just going to be more time invested in an issue that is not a winning campaign issue.
It's an issue
I think he may be indicted. We need more out there from both New York and Washington. We've got 20 months to go. I definitely think he will be indicted. As a former prosecutor, I focused on the Republican convention when they essentially had tough wording on Ukraine. Let's arm Ukraine. And a Trump operative went there and essentially got them to soften that to take out any providing arms to Ukraine. Then after that, Sessions and Page and others were seen there with the Russian ambassador at the convention right after that was done, saying, see, we did what you want. And what happens is there's a big dump of WikiLeaks stuff right after that, quid pro quo.
Right. And I got to say, as a historian and someone who I loved, I have to admit, I loved every minute of Watergate. I actually came back from a beach in Mexico when I read a story about Watergate because I just wanted to be here. And we were in the middle of the Vietnam War. Richard Nixon was launching the drug war, which is the counterattack on the civil rights movement and the hip and the counterculture. All this stuff was going on. All these issues were there. But it was a third-rate burglary that brought down this guy. And we have to assume that somewhere in this morass of illegality, Donald Trump did something that's that is sufficient to get him removed. And Marcy, I agree with you on other issues. Although I got to say, I'm going to put this in. You know, the Democratic leadership with Nancy Pelosi, she's come out and I mean, I just was so enraged when I read this. She's opposing the Green New Deal. She's dissing AOC and Ed Markey. And she comes out with a statement and says, okay, we're going to fight climate change. Let's see a program from Donald Trump. I mean, what is it about the original New Deal and Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, who built the modern Democratic Party with the original New Deal? What is it about the Green New Deal that these corporate Democrats can't understand? And, you know, now you see Joe Biden, for God's sakes, being considered as a front runner among the corporate Democrats. I mean, you know, why not just dig up Walter Mondale, for God's sakes? So to me,
people are missing the point that for Congress, it's not whether he's indictable, but it's whether there's a high treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors. Treason, I agree that it probably has to be something in the time of war, declared war, but I don't know if the public believes that. If they think he's committed treason, he's committed treason. Bribery may come out of New York. We may find evidence of bribery by Trump. New York real estate is a sewer. And high crimes and misdemeanors, that is whatever Congress believes it to be. It is undefined. I did an article evaluating all the prior cases where people have been impeached for, and it could be a sitting judge, it could be Secretary of State, it could be a president. And I evaluated Andrew Johnson very closely, who succeeded Nixon, succeeded Lincoln.
Lincoln,
when he was assassinated. He was a Democrat from Tennessee, and the radical Republicans in Congress hated him, and they came within one vote of getting him removed from office. But of the 12 or 10 or 12 Republicans who did not support getting rid of Andrew Johnson, none of them was ever elected to an office again in their lives. So that may be what is worrying Nancy Pelosi, that this is really playing with not only Donald Trump's life, but our lives as politicians. So we have to be very, very sure that we're going to get him if we do it. And they need 20 Republican senators. And there are 22 up for election in 2020. They need 20 to come forward and say, I'm going to support removal of Donald Trump from office. Very hard.
But one thing I will say, and I did watch, and I want everybody, I don't know if the three of you have seen it, but you gotta watch Colbert. I mean, he is just brilliant on this stuff. And he pointed out with that the Donald Trump's approval ratings did not budge from before this ridiculous, you know, exoneration or after it. The same. I mean, to me, I am terrified that 41% of the people of the United States support him. That's a huge number. It's a Hitler number. It's even more than Hitler. And so, you know, that really concerns me. But according to the Colbert,
and my concern is that the longer the Democrats harp on this, okay, I get it. They want to see the report, or they want to subpoena Mueller. I hope they do. But I certainly hope this doesn't drag on for months, because I think what it will do is only empower Trump's base. It will whip them up, more of these witch hunts accusations. Meanwhile, the Democrats are not offering a substantive alternative.
Right.
You know, they have to have a platform, Bernie's platform. I mean, I'm a big Bernie supporter. They have to have a progressive platform to offer people. That's what's going to get people out to the polls, not harping on this.
I have to go in 2 minutes. I just got the high sign. But I, if I could respond to that, is I really could not disagree more, because I think one of the reasons that base is so solid is the story has not come out. It really has not come out. Our media is completely atomized. It's fractured. Fox News, I mean, one of the big differences between Watergate and now is Fox News and Breitbart, and you have this huge right-wing, powerful press. And this, we need a national spectacle, a shared national narrative that in which the whole story does come out, because this is unparalleled corruption. And we see just exactly how diseased the body politic is. And to sweep that under the rug is a big, big mistake. Yes, we absolutely need health care on a national scale. You know, I'm not saying this, but you have to be able to do both.
Greg, where would your story be that you're running to work on it? You working on something in the Washington Post?
Yes. And it should be...
All right, well, listen, we'll look for it. Thank you for joining
okay.
us.
All right, well, thanks for having me, Harvey. Okay.
Anytime.
Harvey, I would like to add one
thing. I just wanted to say that
let Marcy respond, and then you.
In the aftermath of the whole controversy over Ilhan Omar, suggesting that members of Congress are expected to have dual loyalties to another country, I do want to say that I don't necessarily find the dual loyalty argument one that resonates with people, because it's too reminiscent of the McCarthy era and how that argument was used. But I do want to point out that as long as we're talking about complicity with Russia, what's going on right now with Trump's alignment with Israel, the most right-wing government I think I've ever seen in Israel, one that just passed a nation-state law saying settlements, actually land theft, is a national value, that we have to be very careful, because what we have right now is complicity on the part of Democrats in aligning themselves with AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, which I think is just, like, kind of a gathering of racists, really. And we have in our own 33rd Congressional District, where I live in Santa Monica, we're represented by Ted Lieu, who on many issues is a progressive, right? He supports single-payer health care, supports a Green New Deal. He was there at the airport when ICE was holding immigrants. But yet at the same time, he has just reintroduced his bill to co-develop research, co-develop, test high-tech weapons with Israel. High-tech weapons, particle beam, microwave, laser weapons. And the argument in support of this is that these are merely defensive weapons, anti-missile defense weapons. But the truth is that anti-missile defense weapons are an escalation of the arms race, because they make offensive weapons more likely to be used by countries who think they are immune to retaliation. In addition, these are not just anti-missile weapons. These are anti-personnel weapons that we're talking about developing, high-energy, directed-energy weapons that can be used to temporarily blind, paralyze, fry demonstrators, such as those protesting pipelines, or those marching to return to their homeland in Palestine. So if you want to talk about the United States collaborating with a foreign country, I think we cannot forget to talk about this. This is important to talk about, and I would suggest that if any of you are listening and you live in the 33rd Congressional District, which spans Calabasas, Agoura Hills, on down the coast, including Santa Monica, Palisades, Malibu, Topanga, that you contact me. I'm writing a letter to him. I've got 40 signatories so far asking him to withdraw this piece of legislation, which has been reintroduced. The number is H.R. 6725. And my email is Winograd, W-I-N-O-G-R-A-D, teach, T-E-A-C-H, at gmail.com.
Okay. I've got even 5 minutes to see some basketball. So.
All right, so let's hear it. Ted Vail, what do you got? What do you want? What do you got?
Well, I just think that that Mueller is a very thorough person. There's going to be a huge amount of information he's collected in there. I think people will be able to make their own judgments as to whether he's erected too high a bar for collusion. It's very possible that he doesn't have a smoking gun with Trump, having said something or done something. But you know, most criminal cases are proved through circumstantial evidence, not through direct evidence. And another example I saw is there could be a conspiracy to collude. I heard a good example there. Let's say three people are in a car. They have guns. They have a note saying, give me all your money. They have ski masks to put on their head, and they're arrested a block from the bank. And have they committed a crime? Yes, they have. It's a conspiracy to rob a bank. And this could be exactly what we have here. I want to see what Mueller has to say about a conspiracy, like people gathering in the Trump Tower and meeting with the Russians to see if they can get dirt on Hillary. Three people doing that. Is that not a conspiracy? It didn't end in anything because they switched to abortions. To adoptions, and then Trump himself put out the cover letter. That's what it was about. I think that we'll have to see how much talk there is about conspiracy.
Okay. Conspiracy, I want to ask you one thing before you go, Ted.
Conspiracy to collude. But
as
I got to go.
Prosecutor, well, let me ask you real quick. As a former prosecutor, can they, in fact, subpoena Mueller and make him read that report?
I don't think they could make him read the entire report because there's classified information there. But, of course, the Republicans don't have a problem, like with Benghazi throwing out classified report into the public, classified information. So that could be a very much of a smokescreen to try to prevent any of the report from coming out or redacting whole pages. So there's going to be a big fight over that. And I also want to make the point that don't you think that somebody like Andrew Weissman, who was a dagger-sharp prosecutor, he's now left the government and works for a law school. Don't you think someone like him might not agree with Mueller's conclusions or some of the other 16, 17 people who worked there? Did any of them take a thumb drive with them that had drafts of the report and maybe some of the other documents that somehow find their way into the public record? I predict you're going to see, if this is hung up, you're going to see someone like that doing exactly what was done with the Pentagon Papers. Someone is going to put themselves out there and say, I'm doing this for the country. I am releasing this information. And damn the torpedoes as to what happens to me. So that's my prediction if this thing does not come out soon.
Well, as my mother used to say, from your lips to God's ears. So,
right. Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
on the basketball. Good to talk to you.
Okay, have a great time, Ted, and let me know who wins. All right, Marcy is
here
with me. So
I'm left.
Yeah, well, you're definitely left.
Right?
We know that. So I want to jump in and spend some time talking about the nuclear issue of Diablo Canyon. Now, because you and I have been working really hard, and I want to kind of summarize. We started a really dramatic campaign to get the governor of California to conduct an independent inspection of the reactors at Diablo Canyon, but especially Unit 1, because it was closed. It's now, unfortunately, reopened. And we have what looked like a perfect storm. We had the reactor closed for refueling. PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, in bankruptcy, also with a federal probation officer because they've been convicted of numerous federal crimes, mostly stemming from the death of eight people in San Bruno in 2010. And it seemed that a new governor coming in and a new president at PG&E, and it seemed we really moved fast. And we also had what seemed to be a connection to Gavin Newsom. And we got a petition signed by, pretty much as big a heavyweight turnout as you could get in Hollywood. Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, Mimi Kennedy, you, Lila Garrett, Helen Caldicott, Francis
Martin
Fisher,
Sheen.
Martin Sheen, Graham Nash, Eric Roberts, Ed Begley Jr. We did spectacular. And Jody Evans, of course, helped us get these signatures. And we did everything he could possibly do. And we don't know if we got anywhere or not. We have not heard a word.
Well, we did get a memo that was released by the California Public Utilities Commission, right? This was a ruling of a signed commissioner amending scoping memo. You can explain more of that, but basically saying that the CPUC wants to hear from the Mothers for Peace on the issue of embrittlement, the degradation of the reactor core, and they want PG&E to respond to those concerns. And there's a whole calendar laid out for hearings and briefs and so forth. I don't know what it all amounts to, but clearly the issue will be discussed.
So, I think you know something I don't know here. When did this memo come out from the PUC?
Oh, this came out, where's the date? 3-7-2019. Ruling of a signed commissioner amending scoping memo, consolidating proceedings, and modifying proceeding schedule.
And what
this ruling amends a scoping memo issued February 14th to include additional concern raised by Mothers for Peace and Alex Carlin through public comment to the California Public Utilities Commission.
You know what? You got to forward that to me. I haven't seen that.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's a big deal. Are they calling for public hearings?
They are calling for supplemental testimony. Let me see. Scanning this document.
Great.
Consolidation
this
of proceedings. They want information to be provided in accordance with the administrative law judge overseeing this scoping memo.
Well, this is a big deal. I don't know how I missed this, but as you know, I have a base in Ohio. I grew up in Columbus. I raised $5 there. My wife is still there. We go back and forth. And I was just there. Now, we have a parallel situation in Ohio. The utility, like PG&E, is bankrupt. And they're in bankruptcy court. And, in fact, the Sierra Club has standing in the bankruptcy court in Ohio to deal with First Energy, which owns the Perry Nuclear Plant and the Davis-Bessey Nuclear Plant, which are both on Lake Erie, on two reactors outside of Pittsburgh. Now, I got to tell you, the Davis-Bessey plant is probably the most dangerous, the most decrepit, the most deteriorated reactor in the world. I mean, I have a friend who actually, Kevin Camps, who works on this, who could go on about Davis-Bessey for literally an hour. But this thing is absolutely falling apart. And as someone who owns two 1992 Volvos, I can tell you what it's like to have a machine falling apart on you. Every time we fix one thing, something else goes. And that's 1992. Davis-Bessey went online in the 70s, for God's sakes. So we have parallel cases going on here.
Right.
I got to tell you, I am absolutely terrified. I mean, I don't scare easy, but these reactors just are on the brink.
Well, just to provide some background for those listening, you know, it's all political, and the legislature passed a bill authored by Bill Monning, who represents that area.
The California legislature.
In the California, yeah. To decommission the two reactors in 2024 and 2025. Now, in the run-up to those decommissionings, the PG&E, the utility that owns Diablo, is supposed to increase rates and collect enough money to actually decommission the plant and provide transitional jobs and training for the workers there. I think there are about 1,000 at the plant. And also to offer the community of San Luis Obispo some money to mitigate the fact that they're going to have to sit there for, who knows, 50 years with radioactive canisters on their cliffs. So this money is really, I think, in some ways the heart of it, because the state leaders are looking to PG&E to raise this money, or whoever assumes the ownership of this utility to raise that money to make this happen in 2024 and 2025.
Well, let me read. You just sent me, and I am looking at this memo, which I somehow had not seen from the CPUC, the California Public Utilities Commission. Mm-hmm. They have asked PG&E to respond to them on March 15th, which is 2 weeks ago, about not only embrittlement, but other issues. Now, this raised by the Mothers for Peace. The Mothers for Peace sent them the memo. That's basically, our operation here, our uprising, that prompted this letter from the Mothers for Peace. Mm-hmm. And here's the key sentence. This is a sentence that it really is, these tiny, obscure sentences, as we're going to see with the Mueller report, if we ever see it. This is a sentence from the California Public Utilities Commission. The commission has a responsibility to consider these concerns. I mean, that is, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission will have a heart attack over that. Because the NRC says, no, you don't have any responsibility. We have total control over this.
Yeah, but the NRC is not going to give PG&E any kind of bailout money, as I expect our state legislature will. Right?
Well,
I don't know. That may be what that sentence means. But if you look at the end of the document, it lays out different dates and times for further testimony. It doesn't say hearings. It says testimony which is to be provided by PG&E, by Mothers for Peace, that there's going to be a tour of the plant by the commission to evaluate the legitimacy of these concerns. Right? So I'm not sure whether there will be public hearings, but certainly they're going to be looking into the matter of safety.
Well, I'm going to write a letter to the commissioners.
Uh-huh.
And tell them that any of the commissioners who intend to have children in the future should not go on that tour. I mean, I wouldn't set foot in that plant.
Well,
I'm going near that plant. I got arrested at the Apple Canyon in 1984, and we were a fair piece. And I've since had five kids, so I'm all right. But I wouldn't go anywhere near an operating reactor. Maybe we'll issue a commendation for their bravery for going in there, but anyway, so they have included the Mothers for Peace letter, which is very similar to our petition, as an addendum here. So we have clearly had an impact. This is a big deal for the PUC to now go on a tour of this place. What we really have to do, Marcy, and you listeners listening in, Marcy and I are strategizing here. We have to get them to include on their tour at least a couple of independent experts to to tell them what.
Yeah, because what do they know? What are they looking at?
Right. Man, I wouldn't go anywhere near that place. I'm just, I met Mike Picker many, many years ago, and if I was his friend, I'd say, Mike, thanks for your concern, but don't set foot in that thing. But this is a big deal. This is, Marcy, I don't know how I didn't see this, but I didn't. So here's what we got. We got parallel cases now, and I'm trying to get the Sierra Club in Ohio to jump in on this because they have standing, as I mentioned, in the bankruptcy court in Ohio. I don't know who has standing here. We've been able to file amicus.
Well, I imagine the creditors have standing, and one of the biggest creditors is PIMCO, which is looking to buy out PG&E, according to the LA Times today. PIMCO, the other PG&E creditors, set to pitch $35 billion exit plan. That's the headline. they're proposing that a $35 billion plan that would allow PG&E to emerge from bankruptcy within a year. So I guess they would basically take it over.
Yeah, and they would elect their own board of directors. But who are they?
PIMCO? It's an investment company, right?
Well, what's that going to do to the creditors, like the pension plans here in California, with teachers' pension plans in particular, to have?
Well, the teachers, they're 22 million. But CalPERS, which is also representative of some educators and other state workers, has about 122 million in PG&E.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how this will all play out, but we perhaps should talk to PIMCO.
Well, we should, yes, and we should also talk to the CPUC. this is a really big deal now. They have, I think what's happened here is that the governor, Gavin Newsom, has kicked this to the PUC.
Yes.
To my knowledge, do you know of any public statement that Gavin Newsom has made about Diablo Canyon?
No.
Okay, so I'm sure we'd know if he said something. What we need to do is find out when he's going to have a press conference at some point and ask him. And really, you know, I've been thinking about this. All he has to do is publicly ask PG&E to have the plant inspected. Let them say no.
No, what he has to do is he has to find the money to transition the workers there. I think the IBEW Local 1245 really holds the key here. They're the ones who represent the workers of that plant.
Right. And that was part of the deal. When the deal was cut to let them shut, to have them shut in 24 and 25, there was a retain and retrain segment in there,
mm-hmm.
which was kicked out by the judge, by the way. The judge actually kicked out that money and said that ratepayers could not be held responsible for that deal, which was not good for us. You know, Judge Peter Allen, I think was his name, stripped a whole bunch of money out of the deal that was cut in the shutdown deal.
Well, I think they will need a lot of money because I believe the legislation only sets aside something like $2.5 billion to decommission that plant. It's going to cost a lot more, twice as much, at least.
Oh God, at least. You know, the decommissioning costs. You know, you've got these clowns running around saying that nuclear power is a zero emission. You know, it's like they're like describing nuclear power plants like they're unicorns. You know, and plutonium is pixie dust. And, you know, they're painting this portrait of a nuclear power plant that has absolutely no basis in reality. Mm-hmm. And they're all talking about building new nuclear plants, which is never going to happen. As far as you raised the issue that the Mueller thing is a distraction. They want to talk about building new nuclear plants. Go ahead, guys, knock yourselves out. It's the operating reactors that are terrifying. That's the problem we have.
Yeah.
And so, Marcy, do you want people to know how to get a hold of you, or you just want to be anonymous?
Sure. Anyone who has a question, who wants to see this scoping memo that we were talking about with the CPUC, by all means, contact me. I'm at Winograd, WINOGRAD as in dog, teach, TEACH, at gmail.com.
Right. And I want to mention for all people here in Southern California or wherever you are, if you want to come, we're going to have a big Earth Day celebration in Santa Monica, and you can contact me, solartopia at gmail, to find out. It'll be April 27th, the day after Chernobyl Day. It's a Saturday, and we're going to be doing it in conjunction with a big Green New Deal thing. It will not be a fundraiser. We will ask for donations, but you can come for free if you want, except it will be an organic vegan potluck. So if you have organic vegan pot, you can bring it. You'll be lucky. So,
you know, do we have a moment to talk about the Green New Deal, or are we out of time?
Yes, please. But, you know, I've got to tell you, I am just so furious with Nancy Pelosi. She's dissing the Green New Deal. She actually asked Trump to come up with his own plan. I mean, please. So go ahead, Marcy, because we're not.
Well, I mean, that may be a political ploy to just to expose that he has no plan, that he doesn't take it seriously. What I think has to happen is that the Green New Deal needs to be adopted by state and city by city, county by county. We cannot look to Donald Trump to do anything positive for the environment. Quite the opposite. He will plunder the environment. He will poison our air and our water and steal our public land. So in the meantime, we as California, the fifth largest economy in the country, in the world, we can do plenty. And we have a new governor who has pledged to protect the environment. He's been tweeting about it, how important it is. And so I think we have to pressure him to, as well as our county governments, our city governments, to prohibit any new offshore or onshore oil permits, oil drilling permits. That should be number one right up there, right?
And, absolutely.
And we need a CPUC that is absolutely friendly toward those who want to exit the fossil fuel market. Last fall, the California Public Utilities Commission voted to impose owners' exit fees on cities, there are a lot of them that want to exit fossil fuels for electrification, and you use and source only renewable solar, wind, geothermal energy. But what's happening is that the state is charging them an arm and a leg to do that, or is allowing utilities to charge them an arm and a leg, and it's a real disincentive. So it's, I mean, it's crazy making because last year was it, Kevin De Leon authored SB 100, which the legislature passed, which says that we're to be completely carbon free for electrification by 2045, and there are benchmarks along that route. But how is that going to happen if cities are punished for wanting to go with renewable energy? It can't happen. We're at cross purposes, so we need to hammer that home with the CPUC and with Gavin Newsom. And we need a coastal
commission. I agree with you, 100%.
We need a friendly coastal commission, too. We have too many oil company shills on that commission. So what has to happen? I think we have to have the adoption of a Green New Deal, recognition at every governmental level in California and in every state that we are facing a serious issue regarding climate security. I would say climate emergency, but I'm afraid it's going to sound like Trump's emergency.
We have to make it
a number one issue, and then backward design. How are we going to get there? What has to happen?
Right. It's climate chaos we're really facing. And the best phrase I heard was from Amory Levins, who called it global weirding. I mean, because, you know, the whole place has just fallen into another term, kleanoskatsi, which is a Hopi term for life out of balance. I mean, that's what's happening to our planet, quite obviously. And thank God we have the technology. And now these bozos are doing everything they can to stop renewable energy, including in Ohio. And this one takes the cake, Marcy. Ohio has a one-sentence clause that was put into the Ohio Code in 2015 explicitly for the purpose of stopping wind development. They put in a setback clause and that is impossible for a wind developer to deal with. And they have succeeded in stopping $4 billion worth of wind development in northern Ohio. At the same time, they're now trying to bail out these insane nuclear power plants. It's absolutely sick.
In California, Harvey, we have the two largest pension funds in the United States. Together, they control $500 billion.
We will have to take that up again. Marcy, you're great. Thank you so much. Did we evolve? See you guys in Solartopia next week. Thank you, crew of New York.
We got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia.